Hey, I'm Brian Teller. I work in DevOps and SRE, and I run Teller's Tech. Ship It Weekly is where I filter the noise and pull out what actually matters when you're the one running infrastructure and owning reliability. If something's just hype, we'll call it hype. If it changes how you operate, we'll talk about it. Most weeks, it's a quick news recap. In between those, I drop interview episodes with folks across DevOps, SRE, and platform engineering. Today is one of those interviews. Today, I'm joined by Danny Teller. He's a DevOps architect at Tipalti, and we're going to talk about internal developer platforms and why he thinks we're headed towards more internal IDPs instead of just backstage everywhere. Danny, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Brian. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. As I stated, I'm the DevOps architect for Tipalti. Tipalti is a rather medium-sized business company that is in the fintech world. And most of the things that I handle is working with our developer teams and our architects to kind of steer the direction of the company from not software perspective, but DevOps perspective. And that also includes platform engineering, because we can't have just one of them anymore. So you got to go with both.
Yep, for sure. So one of the things that made me want to reach out to you was about this talk about IDPs. And I'm curious your thoughts on IDPs. Like, what are your thoughts on where do you think IDPs are headed? For everyone else, internal developer platforms. I know IDP is an acronym for many different things in the DevOps world.
Identity.
It could be identity. It could be, yeah. What's your thoughts?
Well, it's obvious that in recent years, there have been a rise of platforms in any company. You can take Backstage, for example, which was open sourced, and everybody can take it and use it as they see fit. And then in recent years, you had rising companies like, what are they called? Northfolk, I think, or Northflank. And you have Port.io, which are offering a huge integration suite, and so on. And many companies that started like to buy into platform engineering. There were already platform engineering teams across different companies, but they were doing something internal. Some of them transitioned from DevOps into DevX, which are more program-oriented rather than ops-oriented. And they started picking up things like Backstage and introducing it to the organization to, you know, simplify the way developers work. Because one of the core things you have in platform engineering is reducing everything from developer perspective, from operations perspective and developer's lifetime, to literally nothing. So they have nothing to worry about. So the golden standard can be like, he types in something and into chat and he gets everything done behind the scenes. That's kind of like a golden mantra, if you will. Mm-hmm. So you have all of that rising every day. And that's why things like Backstage are highly adopted and have a great community. That's why we have great products like Port.io and other ones and so forth.
What do you think changed that makes internal tools more realistic now?
I think with all the changes recently in AI world, in Gen AI, it kind of simplified how we view IDPs. If you're talking about the last 2 years, then we've been constrained to companies and open source solutions. So if you take Backstage, which is a great product when it works, which is a great sentence to say. So when it works, it's great. But when something breaks because it's so tightly knit together with the Node.js and TypeScript and all the stuff it's written in, it makes it very difficult to maintain. So unless you have developers that specialize in that and also understand infrastructure, then you can't actually maintain it. Every little thing breaks it. You always have to rebuild the image and it makes it very difficult to manage. Even if you look at Backstage, Portal Backstage, the recently launched from Spotify, the SaaS offering, this is what they do behind the scenes. They literally explicitly said that whenever you make a change to Backstage, we rebuild your image. So they took what you're doing already and just called it a SaaS platform. And it's written just in their docs. It's a little funny.
I don't know if the docs are still written this way, but I do remember Spotify saying too that they recommend at least like 6 full-time developers managing Backstage, which is just cost prohibitive for most companies. I mean, they just can't afford that level of staff to run an internal platform.
Yeah, I mean, the DevX team should not just be doing Backstage. They have to also develop more internal tools for the company. I mean, whatever DevX engineers do is usually with creating, you know, like the pre-commit hooks, for example, like they were created. I mean, it's kind of a thing for platform engineering to have or DevX developer experience to have. So this is what they do day in, day out. And then came stuff like IDPs. And they made things a lot easier because you have a central control plane that can be integrated into virtually anything. And you can see a developer just working with one single pane of view instead of tens, which include metrics, traces, monitoring, and deployments, pipelines, so on and so forth. So it's great. The idea is great. But then you're encountering a bigger problem, and that's when you start to manage it. And because these teams are very oriented in writing it, that's great. But now that you have Gen AI, you can kind of cut that in half. Mm-hmm. Even your platform engineers, even your classic DevOps engineers, they can do it on their own because they are familiar with the tools like Backstage. They are familiar with tools like kubectl. They are familiar with Terraform, so on and so forth. So even DevOps that are not trained as software engineers do know how these things work. So specking it out with tools like SpecKit or creating plans with Cursor or Claude Code and skills becomes very easy. So you can just ask it, okay, go ahead and study how Backstage works. Mm-hmm. Let's create a Pythonic Backstage instead. Makes it also just as easy to do.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So what do you think Backstage got right?
I think Backstage as a concept, it's great. I think it's one place where you just throw many integrations and it just works and people have one centralized location for that. I mean, they got that right. The idea is great. Condensing also tech docs in there, which is my favorite feature in mm-hmm. Backstage. I love that feature. And the tech radar that they have there, it's just great. It's a great user experience. When it works and you see it live and everything, you just want to buy into that. But when you start managing, that's when you lose it.
So can you give me an example? Like, what did you build and what problem exactly were you solving with that build out?
Yeah. So, well, we at first tried working with Backstage. We did. Mm-hmm. We ran for a whole year. But given that we've had many projects in the same time, so managing Backstage kind of fell apart. And we had a couple of our three engineers trying to manage Backstage as a whole and doing their own thing in developer experience as well. And it just fell short. So you can maintain that for 350 developers. It's insane. And that's not including the DevOps team, which was also trying to help at the time. So even though we integrated stuff into that, we tried to work with it, it just proved to be a maintenance nightmare. So it dropped off. And then you start looking into other products. You see like Port, like I mentioned, and mm-hmm. other ones like Northflank and so forth. And great. So they can sit in your system. They can integrate their SaaS platform. But when you start seeing how they work, when you start seeing if you can do it on your own, because the plugins are already there. They're already online anywhere. Yep. And even if you point an LLM to certain plugins and tell it to learn it and then recreate it, you can just do it with zero maintenance. It becomes super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Yeah. So at my last company, we actually ran Roadie for a while, which is another SaaS Backstage like offering. And I found that it was good at helping us get set up quickly. But beyond that, and we were very immature to the whole IDP process at the time. This was a new experience for us. We were just moving from a DevOps team into a platform like DevEx experience team. But I did find that I don't really know what it really bought us at the end of the day. And it may be a better product now. This was a few years ago, but I don't know what it really bought us above what Backstage could offer or any other, like you mentioned, another SaaS in the adoption.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't know. You can't tell until you actually try it. But for us anyway, all these products, they just fell short. So we decided to try something on our own because, well, at the end of the day, through IDPs, I'm supposed to be able to provision whole environments per se. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be able to see every other environment that I have as a developer, even up to production and so on and so forth. So in the initial stage, we decided to drop all the other ones and focus on what the real pain for our developers. And that was actually developer environments. It's something that's been brewing in our company for a very long time. We've been trying to do it for a very, very long time. And it proved to be very difficult. Because of the nature of fintech and all the stuff that you need to work with and maintain all the time, it just becomes a small developer environment, becomes very, very large. So we tried to minify that as much as we could. And eventually we got to something that you can work with. It wasn't 100% of the entire product, but 85% is already good enough. I mean, missing a couple of features, but it's already mm-hmm. something a developer can use to work with. So we went with the classics. We decided to go with Argo CD, Crossplane, and all the infrastructure is going to manage it mm-hmm. in the first stage. And that's going to start with that. You just commit a normal YAML and you get the entire infrastructure in your backend, everything. You gain all the databases, all the stuff that you need to run the application smoothly. You get it out of the box. Everything is prepared using best practices from platform engineer. Golden images, golden charts, if you will, networking, all clusters, standalone clusters, not namespaces. even monolithic machines if we have to. So everything is bundled together. So in about 30 minutes, you can spin up a whole semi-product environment. And the next stage after that is, well, you know, connecting an AI to that. Because if today I'm spinning an entire flow, everything the system has, I'm just saying, go ahead and use it. So we're trying to play with various ways to see how we can ask an LLM like Claude or ChatGPT through Slack and say, listen, I need this and this XYZ flow. Go ahead and create that for me. So instead of creating the entire flow, which is, say, 5 to 6 machines, including any Kubernetes cluster and some old stuff, legacy machines, we can dumb it down to something really, really small. And the way to do that is playing with LLM. You have to make sure your model can actually access all these flows and to see them and compile exactly what it needs and then request that from Crossplane and Argo.
Yeah.
So this is something we're toying around with to see how we can do that. But we have kind of success in that area because we've developed quite an idea for that. And it proves to be very useful for now. So it goes great, really. I don't mind sharing it. Fairly straightforward.
Is it just an MCP server that can reach out to Argo and kubectl? Or?
So pretty much behind the scenes, you have the Slack bot, which connects to Claude or Bedrock or any other one. In turn, it does use an MCP. So that MCP actually is a tool that calls to GitHub, and it kind of rags all the repositories back to itself using a small depth. Or actually, it just takes a specific file. That specific file is kind of an XML structured file that says, this is the repository, this is what it contains, this is the flow, this is the database needed, these are their names, this is kind of what this repository represents and how it works. So when a user requests, I need payments flow, for example, then it's going to pull all these repositories that are actually relevant repositories because we have our RAG map of all of these repositories. It just pulls all these relevant files, piles that into a list of flows, okay, repositories and flows. And after that, it just communicates with using another MCP with Crossplane and Argo, submits a YAML that it needs, and then provisions it for the developer.
Very cool. And interesting. So going back to these developer environments that you set up, I'm assuming they're ephemeral in nature, like because you're using Crossplane to provision everything?
Yes, we're using also a TTL controller on the as the annotation. Basically, you get an environment from 8 to 5. That's it. And if you need to extend it, you can.
Interesting. Are you using Terraform to provision the initial infrastructure, or is everything through Crossplane?
Everything is Crossplane.
Okay. Interesting. And why did you choose that approach? Is it just to be closer to the actual application in Argo? Or
yes, I wanted to use Argo as much as I could because it just makes sense. You already have the provisioners within Crossplane, so I don't need to toy with anything else. And eventually, if the developer in the first offering just submits a YAML file, which is, 5 lines long, then already they have something reduced instead of just provisioning through a pipeline and everything. Just git commit and you get an environment. It's far simpler, far better, and they always get the same thing.
That's very cool. So, okay, backing up again. Sorry, going back to the developer platforms and this new approach that you went the SaaS way, it didn't work, you decided to do this internal thing. How did you get adoption from the overall engineering team?
It's quite easy.
Okay.
It's quite easy because it's a pain that we had to solve. So this is a major, even pain in the ass of developers since they couldn't have normal developer environments. So once you sell something that gives them exactly what they need, which is environments, so it's kind of easy to roll them in. Mm-hmm. So they have one place. They're not even looking. All they get is this environment that they're connected to. They have their own Argo CD set up in that environment. They can provision whatever they want. And the second phase, which when we'll connect the LLM, will be even simpler for them. So every developer today wants to work with as less screens as possible. They just want to stick to their VS Code, their Visual Studio, JetBrains, whatever, and just stick their nose in there all day long. They don't want to look at metrics and stuff. Just query this. I want this PromQL to tell me if there's a problem in my app at 2 p.m. to 1 a.m. That's what they want. So I think it's easier to maintain that locally using a DevOps team, platform team, or if you want to go even further, an AI ops team, because I do believe that using things like Agent Core and Bedrock is going to be the future of these things. You're not going to see more of graphs lying around or backstage lying around. Because if you can get it through text, and that text can also generate an image for you, which is pretty damn good, by the way, for now, from Nano Bananas, so on and so forth. So you're kind of losing the entire idea of having platforms like Backstage or other ones. All you need to worry about is integrations.
That's interesting. That's an interesting idea. I'm curious, what was the biggest surprise with this approach? Was it the tech? Was it the ownership model? Was it like change management? What was there anything that was a surprise, I guess?
No, actually, there were no surprises. We planned it thoroughly because we knew what we wanted to achieve, how and when. And the biggest thing is what we're struggling with the most is what most people are still struggling with. And that's fine tuning the models to get exactly what you want. So we're constantly working also with AWS engineers because we're also working with Bedrock all the time and we're leveraging that. So we're kind of back and forth with them all the time for this support. And it is working. We are getting better and better at achieving what we want to get.
So, okay, let's say a listener was listening to this and they thought the internal integration aspect is really cool, but they're deciding, they've never set up an IDP before. They're deciding between that approach or Backstage. What signals would push them one way or another, in your opinion?
I think it's maturity, definitely maturity, because I can also vouch for what we did and myself as well, that we started off like everybody. You go with things that are well known, and instead of creating something on your own, you want to test these waters first, because maybe you'd be surprised that you're using Backstage in such a small manner that maintaining it does give you the benefit of everything you need, and you don't change it as much. You maybe update a version here and there, but you don't need all everything it can do. Or if you go and you find that you work with companies that give you the IDP experience, and that's also good enough for you, and you can stick with that, and it's great. I mean, if it works for you, then stay there. But when you get to these points where everything they give you is just not enough, that's when you start working by yourself.
That makes sense. So what's one piece of advice you would give like platform or DevX teams that are wanting to start an IDP come 2026?
I would actually leverage as much as AI as I can with that, and also work with AI as best as I can. I mean, even the recent features of Cursor, that they support skills from Claude, or using Gemini CLI, or knowing which model is best for what kind of work. After I get this through this hurdle and I understand what's going on and how to use it, I will then go after IDPs. I will have the models understand and map out how they work and then start fixing my own ideas around that.
Very cool. All right, let's shift gears a bit. I wanted to talk about two other things, but that were non-IDP related. One was your Mongo Atlas. I think it's called MATLIS.
Yeah, the MATLIS.
Kind of curious, what caused you to build this? And was it because like Terraform operator limits weren't enough? Or like what was the reasoning? Like what pain point were you solving?
Frustration.
Okay.
Yeah, so the story starts with Mongo. When we started working with Mongo, we had our Terraform modules. Everything was up and running great. But at some point, the drift was just too large to maintain. From Terraform perspective, from Terraform, the Mongo modules that we built ourselves, and what was actually within our Mongo Atlas cloud. So that was a little difficult to manage. So we said, okay, we have all these resources, and doing Terraform import is not a nice way to do it, and it's very error prone. So we decided to let that go and see if we can do it in a different way. We tried exploring the Atlas CLI, but it gave us only a management perspective, creation experience. It was very difficult to work with. And then we decided to try the Kubernetes operator. And then we found two big issues. You can't own existing resources like you do in Terraform import.
Yeah.
So if you create a similar YAML with a similar name, resource, and everything, it just says, no, it exists. You can't do anything with it. Yeah. And the other part is it was semi-limited to what we needed it to do. So given all these issues and the lack of abilities to work back from existing infrastructure, it kind of led to the creation of MATLAS. MATLAS kind of tries to combine the user experience from kubectl and also the abilities of Terraform. So in a nutshell, you can basically say, okay, I've got this organization in Mongo Atlas. I want to map all the infrastructure. All I have to do is hit a button and, well, hit a feature. It's called Discover. And it just pushes everything into a YAML file. And moreover, you can transform that YAML file using MATLAS as well into a workable YAML.
Ah, interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. And since I don't rely on states at all, because I thought that it would be counterintuitive, So if you change something, because a lot of people may go onto Atlas because of a problem or whatever and start changing settings, because it does happen. It's a database. You don't know what's going to happen the next day. So I left that part intentionally out. So if you change something online, you can just update the YAML again with the discover feature and have the same thing already as infrastructure as code. If you apply something in then, you can also do it in a surgical manner, like a partial reconciliation. So I don't break everything that's already existing in Mongo Atlas.
So people can find Matless on GitHub? Can they just search up? Okay, awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of, I've recently read from Platform Engineering Labs that they have this tool called Formay or Formai. And it kind of does, it's a tool written in PKL in App language. And the idea behind it is great. It's kind of just trying to remove what Terraform does and also do the partial reconciliation and the discovery and everything. So when I read about that, it reminded me of like, I'm pretty much doing the same thing just in Go and not in PKL.
Interesting. I have not heard of that tool. Interesting. Very cool.
It's fairly new. It's like 6 months old, I believe.
And then, so lastly, I wanted to just touch on this a little bit. You are a Golden Jacket holder. I'm curious what that process was like going through all the certifications.
Well, it was fun and it was tedious at the same time. But there was one aspect of it which really frustrated me a lot. And I do hope that AWS will listen to that and do change it in the future because they do have the capacity to do that. One thing that really pissed me off about the exams is they're really outdated. Mm. That's the one thing that really hits me every time. So, for example, you have the DevOps Engineer exam, which I did that about earlier this year. And when I already did that exam, the code commit service was already taken offline. Yet the exam had 5 to 6 questions around that. So, why are you asking me questions about a service that no longer exists?
Oh, that's frustrating. It's, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the thing that also bugs me around that is they constantly say, yeah, go to Skill Builder and read the docs all the time. Read the docs. Okay. The docs said the service is not existing anymore. So why should I learn about it?
Yeah. Well, then you have situations like CodeStar going away and then changing. There's a lot of inconsistency. I agree with that.
Yeah. And that's the real frustrating part. I mean, but apart from that, it's fun to do. I mean, it does give you a lot of perspective on AWS services and how it works, especially when you read the docs and try to understand further than what's actually asked about in the exams. And it's great. I mean, it's a great feeling when you finish all of that and, you know, kind of just putting it behind you.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I mean, that's an awesome accomplishment. What recommendations would you have for listeners that maybe want to head down that road of trying to pick up all the certifications?
I would start from the very lowest ones. I mean, it's true what they say about the discounts. So start from the very first ones and get that 50% discount for the next one. And it does train you for the other exams because you get to understand how these exams are structured. Yeah, of course, if you go online and find these dumps or whatever people already have out there, you can do that. But once you really do these exams and you even fail once or twice these exams, you understand the structure and it's quite easily understandable for the next time you go ahead and do that.
Yeah, very true. Very true. All right. Anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? Any recommendations?
Yeah, actually I would. Yeah. I mean, there's one thing that's been on my mind quite lately, and it's regarding for all platform engineers, developers, DevOps teams, literally quite everyone. And it feels that with all the rise and changes in Gen AI, a lot of people think that they're staying far too behind. Mm. And I believe that because of these changes, we should strive to really get our knowledge up and running in our heads far faster than we usually should. And subscribe to these magazines, TLDR, so on and so forth, and read more articles and so on. So, because it does give you the benefit of staying ahead of others, and you need to do that, not because of job security, because it's just that interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anyone that's in SRE, DevOps, platform engineering, you have to have a thirst for knowledge because you're always inundated with different tools, CI/CD processes, different ways of doing things. And if you're not staying on top of that, then you really are going to be behind. And the thing I always come back to is, you know, I do a big process or I'm rolling out a new AWS account and a new way of provisioning, basically a new POC that I'm doing. What I did 5 years ago for that POC is not what I would do today. I would architect it completely different than I would have just 5 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago.
Definitely.
So yeah, you kind of need to always have that thirst and hunger for learning and just staying on top of new things. You can't stay on top of everything, obviously. I mean, that's also, you know, the reality is imposter syndrome does exist. You can't know everything, and that's okay. That's why they're teams. That's why we're on teams and we're collaborators, you know, but just trying to be present, I think, is really important.
Yeah, most definitely.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online?
Mostly I'm on LinkedIn. So that's the best way to reach out to me. And some people already have, so.
Awesome. So Danny Teller on LinkedIn, if you want to reach out. I'll also leave your Matless GitHub link in the show notes. And thanks for coming on, Danny. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of great time here. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
All right. That's the interview with Danny. Quick reminder on the format. Ship It Weekly is still the weekly news recap, and I'm dropping these guest convos in between. If you want to catch both, hit follow or subscribe wherever you are listening. And if this episode was useful, share it with a platform or DevEx friend and leave a quick rating or review. It's annoying how much that actually helps the show. We'll be back later this week with a regular news episode. We'll see you then. Thanks.